Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Hey there, bestie. I'm Lori Ami, your What to Read Next podcast host. Join me as we dive into exciting new reads that'll have you reaching for your TBR pile in no time. From gripping mysteries to spicy romances, we'll explore it all and help you find your next favorite book. So grab a cup of tea, cozy it up, and let's discover some amazing reads together. Hi, Jen. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. It's getting hot. I'm in Arizona, so it's getting a little hot out here.
But yeah.
Otherwise, I can.
I live in Florida, so I feel like summer is just not a good time to go visit us. It's just not. It doesn't. I did go to Arizona. I went to Phoenix around this time of the year about 5 years ago, and I was just in the air conditioning. They had us had lunch outside, and I was just dying.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm sorry, but like, no.
Why are we doing this?
It's like 100 degrees. Like, the ice is melting.
Yeah, this is where we do our reading, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm reading. I'm like, oh, there's other people. It's winter and they've got blizzards. It's like, we're in the read. This is our time.
This is our time. Yeah. I was like, no. I tell you, like, right now, Florida is just. It's about to go down. It's just going to be like hot and humid and just disgusting. You just melt.
You guys have hurricanes. I mean, at the end of the summer, the hurricanes.
We do get hurricanes too. Yeah. Not looking forward to that, you know. But I grew up in Puerto Rico, so I'm used to hurricanes. I've pretty have experienced them most of my life, except the 20 years I live up north. But
wow.
Now that I'm in this warm weather, I'm like, yeah, it's just part of it. It's part of the course.
I hear that.
It is what it is. Let's talk about Love at First Book. What is the elevator pitch?
It's weird. It's a continuity. So the elevator pitch was really between me and my editor, where I had written summer reading and I'd written a side character. And I just felt like she deserved her own story because she was such a really good best friend, but she clearly, her life was stuck.
Yep.
And I feel like everybody has a point in their life where you're just stuck. And I was like, so I said to my editor, my pitch is, can we get her unstuck? Because I think she could go to Ireland and really be happy. And my editor was like, okay. That was my pitch. We're going to Ireland, basically.
I love this. As someone who has been stuck in different places, and it's just like, I identify with your main character, like the family trauma, the family issues, and not feeling like you're in the right place, right time, and not doing this. It's like sometimes we talk about geographical cure, like it's just not going to fix the problems because you're going to carry them with you. But sometimes it creates forward movement of just like changing the whole scenery.
Yes.
Even though it's really uncomfortable. And and trying out and getting outside of the comfort zone, doing something that's just completely foreign to what you're supposed to be doing or you think you should be doing, and then allowing yourself just to coexist and even thrive in it, which is what we see this character happen. It's like she flourishes in ways that she didn't expect it to be possible.
Exactly. No, it was fun. And, fish out of water and taking a risk, all the things, because I think when you are stuck, you need something big because it's so easy to furnish a rut, know? And I think you need, so for her, it was the opportunity to work with the author who had meant everything to her. So it's like you need something really like lottery winning big to get you to, so it was kind of fun. And it was fun because it's like I got to be, because I am an author and I've written a lot of books, and it was just like, I have not had writer's block yet, but to kind of go through like the, and how hard writing is, and just kind of be able to like appreciate that job from another character's perspective. It's hard to explain, but it was like, it's kind of a book lover's dream. You have a librarian, a bookseller, and an author. you know, and I got to try on the hat of each one of them. And it was just like, yeah.
So, because you're a former librarian, so you're an author, and you may have, you know, like connected with booksellers. So, you know,
right.
Which one would you, if you have a magic wand and $1 million or billions of dollars, because $1 million is not enough, billions of dollars,
no,
and you can actually pick one profession that you're just going to do it for the sake of doing because you have enough time, you don't have all your necessities, which one would you go for in that alternate universe?
Yeah, you know, it's weird because I think because I've done the librarian thing,
yeah,
and I've been pretty much a full-time writer for about 15 years, and I love it. And I would always write, like, even if I went back to the library, I'd write. If I became a bookseller, I'd write. But the one that I haven't done is be a bookseller, and it's such an interesting time. Like, the rest of us walk into bookstores, and I'm always like, wow, I owned it. I would do there. You know, I'm probably totally wrong, you know, but I'm just kind of like, I think I would love to try being a bookseller. I think that would be awesome. I mean, probably all going, oh my God, what are you thinking?
Okay. And then we're a bookseller and we got obviously $1 billion. We got the reserves to Amazon and we can do whatever kind of bookstore we want to have. And obviously audience comes in and there's no problem of shutting it down. What kind of bookstore would you create? Like, you be so niche that's just like one genre only, or can you just be like everything you want?
Yeah, I think interestingly enough, you know, it's like it's funny because, oh man, I'm probably going to get burned at the stake for this. And I think it's changing, so I'm not really thinking ahead. But it's like things I would want. I'll start with the things I would want. I would like to have cats in my books.
Yes.
But I'd also like to have dog day because I have both, you know, and I love my critters. We get a bird day, but you know, you gotta watch where they fly. But I would love to have animals in it. I would love to have a cafe, like a really good one, you know, coffee, sweets, cupcakes, naturally. Yeah. And then I would like to see more indie published people on the shelf because I think there's a weird, you know, publishing's in a really weird time right now. It's like a lot of traditional authors are pivoting to indie. Being able to reduce print runs, you know, as a published indie, it's like if you could find a space to sell those would be super cool. So I don't know. I mean, I just feel like you could do a lot of amazing, especially if money's no object.
Money's not object. You got Amazon reserves. Like, you got the reserves.
Thank you so much. You know, it's nothing. I love publishing. I, you know, I love all the people in it. And I, you know, but it's, you know, I'm seeing more and more indie authors coming up and, you know, what if you could even attach to like a writer's program to the bookstore?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like people come in and be taught how to write their item. You know, pie in the sky.
Pie in the sky. I love sometimes dreaming of those ideas and like maybe somebody's listening and be like, oh my gosh, I got $1 million reserves. I can do this myself. You know, let the idea flow.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we all spend so much time on computers and screens. And I think just having a, you know, like a safe space to go to that's just, you know, got a cat and a cup of tea and all the books you want to read. And then maybe you could take a writing class.
Or just pursue for the sake of pursuing, like, you know, like just in the creative hobby of just writing, just imagination.
Yeah.
Just because,
without any attachment to outcome. That would be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like in some ways, I think later on in life, I've learned to not attach the outcome. And it's harder, but it's so much more, my life is so much better. But now I don't have to think about it. It's harder because my anxiety wants to attach it. But the reality is that if I don't attach the outcome, if I just pursue for the sake of pursuing and everything is going to be, all my needs are going to be met, I actually have a better quality of my life, you know? And it,
And I think that whenever you're pursuing the, because you're not attached to the outcome, it's more authentic.
Maybe,
you know, it's like, you know, we have to do so much social media now, and it's a lot of authors hate it because it's one more task, you know, so it's not like you can just immerse yourself in the book. Then you have to think about, well, I have to do 5 posts today, 2 on Instagram, 2 on Facebook, 1 on, you know, whatever. I can't even keep up. Too many. And it's, you know, and it's, on the one hand, it's a really nice way to reach your readers, but on the other hand, it's like one more chore, you know, it's just like, and then you feel like, and then you can't help but like, did anybody like it? Like the worst is you put something up that you're like, oh, that's really clever. Crickets. Yeah. You're just like, I'm an idiot.
No, I think it's it's just, it's a lot. I think we're just in a society that's expects us to produce for the sake of producing and just going reach. And it's like, it's exhausting and it's just like depletes the energy. And yeah, I've heard doom scrolling all day long. So it's like, it feeds like these, like our attention span is like 2 seconds long.
I know. It's like, I'm the worst. It's like, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's getting bad. But like even writing, because I've been writing 15 years.
Yeah.
And I used to be able to sit down, bang out 10 pages. And now it's like the minute it gets hard, I find my phone in my hand going.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually learning how to watch TV. The simple act of watching a 45-minute show is like, without a little screen on the side, it's something. I don't understand. I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and that was the only thing we had.
Yeah, you know, some, you know, when I was little, you had to walk across the room and change the channel.
She said, you're on the remote controls.
You were it.
But
it's just a lot. Yeah. And then I'm kind of worried that, you know, because like my mom is 81.
Yeah.
Got liver. And, you know, so I've got her visiting and then my sons are in their 20s. So they're visiting. And it's like, we're all hanging out and like literally everybody's. And she's as bad as there. So I'm like, it's not like you can say it's kids anymore. And then the whole thing is like, oh, did you see this? Did you see this? And it's like, no, because, you know, whatever. But it just cracks me up. I'm like, there's really no, it's not like a young kid thing. It's everybody,
Everybody. Yeah, it's everybody. I think it's just how we are. So, but let's talk about some cozy mysteries, because as I was sharing at the beginning, before we start recording, I actually, by accident, I was in a really massive reading slump. I was like, love is dead. I don't want to read more romance. I need something else. Give me some murder. And I was like, well, I have anxiety, so I don't have PTSD. So I can't get the murder too grisly and too gory, because then I get nightmares. So we're like, it triggers like PTSD. So accidentally, I knew about cozy mysteries because you came on the show about a year ago and other people have talked about cozy mysteries. And I was like, you know, I think I'm going to try cozy mystery. And I tried. I asked someone who was like, here's a guide and start. And your books were there. And I was like, okay. And I just went through basically every series starter, because I was like, I try to read one in the middle of the series. And I was like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And so cozy mysteries are basically kind of like, it's amazing because there's like tons of books and there's a little bit of everything for everyone. There's diversity, there's queer, there's like different occupations and different ideas and characters and series and stuff like that. But they're overwhelming too, because there's so many choices. And you're an author who has way too many choices for me.
Yes, I agree. Cozies are awesome. They were, you know, pretty much how I started. I wrote rom-coms in the early 2000s, a couple for Harlequin, and then that didn't really work. And I, and then I pivoted into mysteries. And they said, you know, can you write a cozy? I was like, sure. I didn't know what they were. I didn't realize, you know, that there's a hook, and it's, at the time, I think crafts were big, and food, and then anything with books, and, you know, so I kind of covered all those. But I think what I like about them is everything's kind of off the page. You know, there is a murder, but it's off the page, so you don't have to be all gored up. But I also like them because it's usually a community, which is kind of a found family for your characters. Yeah. And you get really, really attached. And a lot of times, like, I have a cupcake bakery series, and I wrote the first one, Sprinkle with Murder. And it's set in my hometown in Scottsdale, because there was, you know, a sprinkle up the street. So research! So I wrote the first one and I got all these comments being like, how can they possibly run a cupcake bakery if they're always like out and about? And I was like, oh, that's a good point. Like, you can't just flip the sign and get out of there. You can't actually be in the bakery. I'm like, oh, so we need to hire somebody. And I think it's the second book. Pretty sure it's the second book. I've written like 16, so it's hard to remember.
Yeah,
I think it's the second book. So I had this old guy who was like 80 something, and he was just supposed to show up for that book. And, you know, like 16 books later, this guy, Marty, who I'm really attached to, he's like 80 something in the book. They never really say, but he's in his 80s and he's still there. He's like Janet Ivanovich's hamster, you know, Rex. I think he's still alive. I'm not even sure, but it's like, I'm like the oldest hamster ever.
Maybe it's just like these characters are like The Simpsons, like they don't age like with time.
Exactly. They're kind of frozen in time.
Yeah, yeah. And they're frozen in time and they just coexist in this world and stuff like that. So first things first, now that I think about it, you have 16 books in the series. How do you keep track of those characters or like murderers or specific? Do you have like an organizational system or like?
As a librarian, you would think I would.
Right. I don't.
And I wish I did. And I wish I'd gone back and done it, but I never did. I reach out to readers a lot. Like one of the characters in the cupcake book, since I've got a cupcake book coming out in a couple weeks, Fondant Fumble. So it's a whole football scene, which was just hilarious. But where was I going? Oh, yeah. So there's one character in there who has 7 older brothers. At the time, I thought that was hilarious to write in. And then I realized I couldn't remember all that. So I'll put up a post on, you know, Facebook or Instagram. It's like, whoever can name the 7 brothers right now, I'll send you a signed book.
Yeah. I love this idea.
So they've helped me out a couple of times. I'll be like, what was the name of so-and-so's cat? I can't remember. And I can't find it because I can't remember, you know.
Yeah.
So I rely on my readers a lot. So, yeah. And I should have kept a Bible. Oh, but here's the thing. So when I sold the Cupcake Bakery Mysteries, I was like, yeah, it's a cupcake bakery. That's good for like 3 books. I mean, I can't. What am I going to do? Yeah. 16 books later. So wrong. So very wrong. And so grateful that I was so very wrong. But yeah. So I would have done it a Bible. Like if I, but I didn't. So
it is okay. I actually read The Strangle of Murder. I actually listened to it. Because it was a short book, so it was like a quick one. Yeah. It was like great, and it was a great introduction. I was like, oh, I need to come back to the cupcakes. Because I used to, back when I lived in New York, you know, this is the early, mid-2000s, and your Magnolia and Sprinkles and Billy's and stuff like that. I used to do a tour guide to NYU students, a cupcake crawl of going to different cupcake places. And so that's I'm like, awesome. I have an affinity for cupcakes. Like, I'm like, I have no problem with it. Like, just have this.
I think you're giving me an idea for a book.
Yeah. Yes. Like,
on a tour, a cupcake tour.
I like it. Like, yeah, like a bar crawl, same idea.
Yes, but with cupcakes, so much better. So much better.
So much better. So I really like this. But talk to me about your other series that you have. Do you have a bookshop series or is it a library?
Yeah, it's a library because librarian.
Yeah.
And that one is also, that's about 15, 16 bucks. And the Christmas, I just had one come out in January, Fatal First Edition, which was set on a train, like part of it's on a train.
So oh my gosh.
And then there's a Christmas one, a Mary Little Murder Plot, that's going to come out in October. So that series, I'm hoping I'll write more in soon because it's, I intentionally set up older heroine and hero, not planning to have families, just happily married in their little villas with the found family.
Yeah.
Because I thought that would give it longevity. Because if you have to have a baby and chase children and, you know, you don't have time. And plus you can't. My thing was always, you can't put yourself at risk if you're an amateur sleuth, if you have kids. Because,
yeah,
this is bad parenting. I mean, if you're a cop, that's your job. I get it. You have no choice. But I was always like, the amateur sleuth with a baby, I'm like, that makes me uncomfortable. So for me, I made the conscious choice with them that no kids. And then the other one, way back when Will and Kate got married, it was like the middle of the night and I was watching the wedding. And Princess Beatrice came out with it. Crazy. And I was just like, oh man. And I was very tired. But I was looking, you know, through Twitter at the time. Everybody was just being so mean about that hat. And I was just like, God, who made that hat? And I thought, oh, I'd want to kill him. And then I was like, ooh. So I wrote to my editor the next morning, like, crazy idea. How about a London hat shop? And she was like, yeah. So then I did like 6 or 7, 8. I don't even know how many of those. And I don't know if I'll be able to go back to those because they're mass market is kind of,
yeah,
fall by the wayside, and a lot of the cozies are written in mass markets. So it might be that these go to only ebook or.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'm just kind of like, well, wait and see because we're in crazy times.
Yeah, it's kind of like a weird time. I only read ebooks.
It keeps your, you know, they're cheaper and it keeps your library, man. Like you would drown in books if you bought it.
I got rid of my book collection due to pest issues. And after that, I was like, never again. I need to like curate, and I told the publishers, please forget my address, don't send me stuff, we're good, just send me the ebook.
I'm out,
just send me the ebook, I'm fine with it. And I'm like a big library supporter, so I either get it from the library or like look for like requested stuff like that. So I found that it's actually much more easier to manage than like this big book collection. I know, like it's.
I mean, I think it's nice when they make pretty editions of the books. You know, like there's like I loved Madeline Miller's Circe and Song of Achilles.
Yeah,
and then when Barnes and Noble was like, "We're doing a special edition," I was like, "Of course, I'm proud of it."
There's something to
it. Has to be like a rare, you know what I mean? Otherwise, I don't. My husband has a book problem. That man has well over 2,000 books. He's the most well-read person I've ever met for music, and he's a musician. It's so funny. But he used to be a newspaper reporter, so he's a word guy. But I have none. I own no books. It's like they're either ebooks or, you know, library books. And the thing is, I get a lot of readers who will say, "I feel really bad. I didn't buy your book. I got it at the library." And it just drives me crazy, because what people don't understand is the library, there are more libraries in the United States than there are McDonald's.
Yeah.
And I tell people that all the time. I'm like, that's fine. That library will buy 4 or 5 copies. It's okay. Like, it's a $1 billion industry. It's fine. It's
more expensive. It's more expensive to libraries. They charge libraries more expensive books.
They do charge them more. Yes, because they know more people are going to read it. It's we know what you're up to. But the nice thing, the way I always look at it too, is I find authors at the library. Like if I'm not sure of you, I'll check your book out. But if I fall in love with it, then I'm more likely to buy it when it comes out. Do you know what I mean? So then it's a great way to like vet people, authors.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm like a huge library supporter. I find it's a great place. Right. Love steak place too. Discover new genres, discover new authors, try different things. It's just, it's low stake. Like if you don't like it, you don't feel bad. Like, oh my gosh, like I spent all this money on this. It's like, no, I'd rather spend like a fluffy to non-resident cards to libraries. One, to help them with the circulation, like they have membership, but at the same time, give them a little bit of money. But the other part is like, it allows me to right now during this cozy mystery readathon is like, oh, I can try this book. I love going to Libby and looking for librarians' recommendations of like, here's all these other books. And I'm like, oh, this one looks good. And give them a try. And it has allowed me to read 20, 30 books that I normally wouldn't be able to afford. Like,
absolutely.
To new authors to me that I wouldn't be like, okay, I don't want to feel like bad about it.
Exactly. Yeah, and when you know, the worst is when everybody's like, "You have to read this book," and then you buy it and it stinks.
Yeah. So no,
back going to the library donation.
It's just gonna go to the library. It's gonna go to free little library.
Exactly. Enjoy.
Somebody else's my 1 star is somebody else's 5 stars.
Exactly, and that's so true. Yeah, I'm always amazed that like. Even people you know, like your dearest, dearest friend, you can have such an opposing opinion on the book. And it's so hilarious to me. It's like, and then you have to like reevaluate the whole relationship.
Yes. I have friends. I have a lot of bookish friends because I've been in this industry for some time. But I have to be discerning. Like there's only certain people who we have similar tastes. And then there's a bunch of people who are opposites. And I'm like, if you hate it, then I love it. If I hate it, you love it. You know,
exactly.
It's just a good marker.
Yeah.
And I learned not to rate books for that reason, because I'm like, it's so subjective. And I think it's like, I can tell you how it sell the book, why I hate it, what may be my triggers may not be your triggers. And I'd rather just recommend you, like, here's the picture, what I think it is, make your own decision, be your own.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think that's good. Because it is true. It is rare. And I think, you know, for authors who get 1-star reviews and get really hurt about it, it's like, it's okay.
It's okay. It's sometimes 1-star reviews, I think with romance, the 1-star reviews I hear like too much sex or too much this. I'm like, oh, that's a 5-star for me.
Yeah. Like, wait, what was that?
Like, yeah. Or there's like cheating. And I'm like, okay, I'll read that. I'll give it a try. Like, you know, it's like, I think sometimes we get so bogged down on the audience. And in reality, is like the audience will find each other to find you find your audience, like you attract the right audience, like those
right, like attracts like, and
yeah. And those 1-star reviews can actually sell you more books, you know.
That's very true.
So, but thank you for sharing some cozies that I now get to try out. So I think I'm going to do the library first, and then I'm going to go to the hat shop just to take a trip.
Aww. To thank you. I know that's pretty much why I wrote it. It was like, ooh, London.
Yeah, take a trip in London. So,
yeah.
Jen, tell us where you can find you online.
You can find me at just jenmckinley.com. I just redesigned. Well, I didn't do anything, but I got an actual professional to redesign the webpage. So it's so, she just did such a good job. Yeah. I'm so happy. So I highly recommend checking that out. And then literally all my books are there, all of them. So, and with buy links and whatever, any appearances I'm doing are on there, stuff like that. And then I'm on probably my favorite social media is Instagram, and it's just at McKinley Jen. And that's where I am most. Like, if you want to get in touch with me, that's where I have DMs. Facebook is just, I just kind of post to Instagram and then it doubles over to Facebook because yeah. The reality is there's so many bots and so many trolls. And it was just like, I can't manage that. That's too much. So I don't do much with that. I do have a private Facebook group called McKinley's Maze. And my assistant runs it and she is a house on fire. Like this girl, when she does it, she does a lot of giveaways and they're massive. It's like 5 books. Some home decor, bookmarks, pens, earrings. I mean, she just, it's like a lot. Like, I can't even imagine what the boxes come like. So she does a lot of giveaways and the community is really nice. Like, everybody is just sweet and kind. There's, you know, obviously good behavior rules in it. And the reason we did a private group was because I couldn't do any giveaways on the regular Facebook because of the bots and the trolls. And it just, you know, you get cloned and then they're asking people for their credit cards. And I'm like, yeah. I don't want to be the person that gets someone ripped off. Nope, not facilitating. So McKinley's Mavens, and I pop in there a lot. That one's good. And then I do a blog with the Mystery Writer Friends, and it's called Jungle Red Writers. And we have guest authors, and we blog every single day. And then we have a Facebook group also with giveaways and fun stuff, and that's called Reds and Readers. So those are probably the places you could be next.
I love this. And I did get scammed on Facebook, so I don't mess with Facebook anymore.
Oh my God, it's a nightmare. Like, if I could actually just leave, I would, but you can't
Meta, another company that controls
everything. I know. It's like between Amazon, Meta. You know.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
It's too much. Yeah. It's too much. They're exhausting me. I think we're all going to die young because we're tired.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Jen, for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. You're always a pleasure to visit with.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the What to Read Next podcast. If you enjoy our bookish conversations and want more recommendations, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, head on over to the What to Read Next blog for a list of books mentioned in today's show. Happy reading. Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.